If asking your mate down the pub about vaping, here's what they'd probably say. No one agrees if it's safer or not, so you might as well smoke anyway. Now what your mate needs is a Cochrane review. All the facts have been checked at least twice. They'd find there's a lot that the experts agree on and might give you different advice.
Hi, my name is Nicola and I'm a researcher based at the University of Oxford in the UK.
And I'm Jamie and I'm a researcher based at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in the United States.
We are both members of the Cochrane Tobacco Addiction Group. Welcome to this edition of Let's Talk E-Cigarettes. This podcast is a companion to a research project being carried out at the University of Oxford, where every month we research the e-cigarette research literature to find new studies. We then use these studies to update our Cochrane systematic reviews of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation and interventions for quitting vaping. This type of review is called a living systematic review, and in each episode we start by going through the studies we found that month and then go into more detail about a particular study or topic related to e-cigarettes.
This month we ran our searches on the 1st of April 2026. For our e-cigarettes for smoking cessation review, we found three papers linked to studies that we've already found, and for our interventions for quitting vaping review, we found one paper linked to a previously included study. So we don't have any new completed or ongoing studies to report on this month, but luckily enough for us, Nicola had the chance to chat to a researcher who's working on a brand new program of research. That program of research is led by Nicola and Rachna Beg, and it's called Trident, and it's funded by the NIHR. So in this month's deep dive, Nicola spoke to Dr. Chinchin Yang, who's a qualitative researcher at the University of Oxford in the UK. She's been working on data from the MASC study, which is a study included in our e-cigarettes for smoking cessation review.
Obscure science term definition.
In the MASC study, patients who smoked and had a long-term healthcare condition attended their usual GP annual review appointment, where the GP or nurse discussed their smoking as usual. Those who declined referral to stop smoking services and smoking cessation medication were randomly allocated to either the control group, who received nothing beyond the usual care already provided, or the intervention group, who were given brief advice and an offer to try an e-cigarette. The numbers of participants who reduced and quit smoking were measured at follow-up.
Dr. Rachna Beg spoke about that in our February 2021 episode, and this work is helping to inform the ongoing Trident work.
Hey, hi, Chinchin. It's really great that you're able to join us on the podcast. Thank you for doing this. I was wondering if you could just start out by telling us a bit about yourself and what it is that brought you to studying e-cigarettes.
Thank you, Nicola. Really happy to be here. So I'm a conversation analyst by background, and currently I work as a qualitative researcher and also a conversation analyst for a clinical trial that aims to develop smoking harm reduction for people with serious mental illness. Part of this trial is to use conversation analysis to analyze the MASC data set that you just mentioned to develop the offer of e-cigarette. And it is from here that I first get involved in the study of e-cigarettes. So it's quite an unconventional route. I look at e-cigarette through the lens of interaction, and I'm more interested in how do people talk about e-cigarettes and deliver e-cigarette in healthcare settings.
That's great and super interesting. I kind of obviously know a little bit about conversation analysis, but only more recently, and I find it super interesting. So I wonder if you could just tell us a bit more about what conversation analysis actually is and how it can be used in research.
So conversation analysis is the study of naturally occurring conversation, literally. So the conversation can be everyday conversation between friends and family, or it could be conversations that happens in an institutional setting, such as in a classroom, in a courtroom, or in our case, in healthcare interactions. So when I talk about conversation analysis, people are really curious about how do you do with conversation analysis, because conversations are so messy and chaotic to some extent, and that's not the truth. To give just one example of that, so if you imagine a conversation, either it's between two people or a group of people talking, and what you could presumably observe is that people talk one at a time. So why does that happen? That is because there's a turn-taking system that works, that governs the conversation, that the speakers wouldn't even realize. So these mechanisms works in three ways. It could be the current speaker select a next speaker to talk, or the next speaker could self-select. And if these two scenarios are not happening, the current speaker could continue to talk. And that is why people take turns at talk. So see, conversation is not chaotic, it's organized. So the other important thing about conversation analysis is that we care not only what people see, but also how did they see it. So are they saying that with certain delays, with certain emotions, with certain, you know, silences in their turn? So one example of this is from the exploration of the mask recordings. What I've found is that clinicians can do offer of e-cigarette in really different ways. And one way of them doing this is something like, okay, so we have this e-cigarette here, do you want to try it? Versus the other way, the clinician might say something like, so we have a really good news for you, and the good news is that we could offer you a free e-cigarette. Would you like to give it a go? And these two ways of making the offer really impact on the uptake rate of the offer of e-cigarette. And that's how we see the way that you talk about certain things really work. So in terms of how conversation analysis is used, I'll talk from my own experience. So I'm more familiar with, you know, healthcare interactions. And this is an area where CE has been greatly and widely used. And within general healthcare interactions, CE has been used to help clinicians to prescribe antibiotics for patients. And it has also been used in populations who have neurogenic conditions. So help people with communication disorders communicate with their family, friends, and professionals. And how CE can be used to improve their conversation. And the other big strands of CE study is what we are doing at Oxford, which is using CE in the clinical trials. So we use CE to develop intervention. We use CE to check whether the intervention is delivered as intended. We also use CE to train professionals to deliver the certain intervention. I hope that covers some of what CE did and in the field of healthcare.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you. And it's just amazing that something that we kind of take so for granted had all these kind of elements to it that obviously can just impact so much on our health, you know, what's effective, what people are likely to take up in terms of treatments and things like that. And it's so important. So yeah, really great to hear more about it. And it'd be really great if you could tell us a bit more about your research using the data from the MASC study, and in particular, what you have actually found.
Yeah, so part of the intervention development of our current trial is to use real-life data of clinician offering e-cigarette in annual health review from MASC to identify real-life conversational features that could improve the e-cigarette offer uptake. And there are just so many interesting findings that would have gone unnoticed if not using conversation analysis. And one example is about how clinicians prepare the ground before offering an e-cigarette. So in many of the consultations, before making the offer, and the clinicians would ask patients, have you tried an e-cigarette before? And if the patient had tried one at some point in the past, you'd hear a response like, yes, I tried it, but it doesn't work. So in that format, the question tends to bring out a negative experience from the patient, which can actually close down the space for making the offer. But what we also found was that a tiny tweak in the question, changing it to, have you tried an e-cigarette recently, produced a very different type of answer. So for people who have tried it in the past, but not recently, the answer suddenly shifted from a yes to no. And that no creates a perfect space for the clinicians to introduce the offer of the new generation e-cigarette. And it massively increases the chances that the patients will be open to hearing the offer. I just can't resist to share another findings here as well. And another key finding from MASC came from looking specifically at patients living with severe mental illness. And we found that advising these patients to quit was particularly challenging. And quitting was often deprioritized because patients were dealing with complex mental health concerns, mm-hmm. social concerns, which understandably felt more urgent to them. But what's even more striking is that the clinicians, they do not work on those patient resistance. And what they do is they acknowledge it. But the result of acknowledging is that that could potentially close down the activity of the offer, so making the intervention really hard to implement. Mm-hmm. So that's the two, I would say, most interesting findings that we found from the MASC study.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And you obviously said, you know, you're working on this current research moving towards a randomized controlled trial. Can you give us a bit of a sense of how you're now actually going to use those findings in the research going forward?
So what we've found from the MASC recording is that some of the practices that the clinicians are using is really good to deliver the offer, and they prove effective in delivering the offer of e-cigarette to patients. And those include stretching, switching from smoking to vaping, and not stressing stopping, which sounds more effortful for those patients. And also includes what I've just mentioned, that they deliver the offer as a type of good news. And that could potentially increase the uptake of the e-cigarette offer as well. And so we'll keep those, which works really well in MASC, in the design of our Trident study. And then what we'll work a bit more on is what we found that doesn't work really well in MASC data, which is the management of patient resistance around their concerns on the e-cigarette, and also the situations where they prioritize their mental health concerns to resist the offer of e-cigarettes because they think that if you are managing smoking, that would impact on their mental health in a negative way. One way to do this is that we'll debunk the misconception of the relations between mental health and smoking. So we hopefully equipped the clinicians with those practices that could deal with the resistance in the Trident project.
So that will be kind of implemented through clinician training, is that correct?
Yeah, that's our next step. We will use all those findings from MASC to design the communication guide that will be used to train the clinical professionals so that they could deliver the e-cigarette offer according to the communication guide that we developed.
Amazing. That sounds great. So obviously, you've talked about kind of designing that training. What are the kind of next steps for the Trident program? What does that program of research actually involve in the longer term?
So the next big step is to see really how all this plays out in the real world. And so we've designed this communication guide and we've trained the clinicians to deliver the offer. And what we'll do is we'll record the consultations between the clinicians and the patients when they are delivering the offer of e-cigarettes to them. And we'll use conversation analysis to do another round of CA analysis. And in this round of analysis, what we are really interested in is the interactional detail includes how do clinicians actually deliver the e-cigarette offer? How do patients respond? Do they resist? And if they resist, what the resistance looks like? And what do clinicians do next? Do they manage the resistance in ways that keep the conversation going? And if the answer is yes, and if we can show that these interactional practices really help patients accept the intervention, then Trident will provide some of the first real-world evidence on how to deliver smoking reduction intervention effectively for people with severe mental illness. And that's incredibly valuable for clinicians and also for the service users. And if that all plays out well, these findings will also be used to optimize an even larger scale trial to be conducted across the UK.
Amazing. That's great. And one of the things that we often ask people at the end of the podcast is, if, you know, money and resource was no issue, what do you think is the important things to do for research in this area going forward? So how do you think conversation analysis should be used in smoking or any other behaviour change research going forward?
I think this is a really very good question. I think conversation analysis has already taught us a lot about behavioural changes, especially in areas like smoking management and weight management. Most of the research so far has focused on moments where clinicians give offers, give advice, and that's really important. However, that's only part of the story. And what I'm really interested in is what happens before the advice or offer even appears. How does that topic get introduced? These early moments, they shape how the advice lands later on. And CE is uniquely good at showing how those sequences work. I also think there's huge potential to use CE in other areas of health behavior change. Things like changing dietary activities, things like vaccination uptake, and also treatment adherence. I think those are the places where clinicians try to, you know, influence more behavior change, but we know very little about the interactional side of it. So for me, the future is really about widening the lens. So not just analyzing the moments of the offer or advice itself, but also looking at the whole pathway that leads into it, and then using that knowledge to design better interventions, to train healthcare professionals in a way that really reflects what works really well in real-world conversation. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the treatment adherence issue is just so important. It's really important in smoking, but obviously across the whole spectrum of healthcare. So watch this space. It sounds like you could be doing some very important work in the future. Thank you so much, Xinxin, for joining us.
And thank you, Nicola, for having me.
That was really interesting, Nicola. I know you have this whole life outside of our e-cigarettes podcast and review, but I love hearing more about it and hearing about Trident as well and knowing that this really cool work is going to shape it. When do we get to see results from Trident?
Well, that'll probably be quite some time, Jamie, as we discuss a lot on this podcast. Trials take a long, long time, and this one hasn't even started yet. And in fact, as part of Trident, we're carrying out hopefully two trials. The first will be a feasibility study, and the second, if the feasibility study goes well, will be a larger trial. So it will be some time. The whole program is 5 years and we're only just over year one, but we did a lot in year one. So as well as the work that Xinxin's just talked about, we also did two systematic reviews, which I'm sure you get very excited about. And that's all to do with actually people's perceptions of e-cigarettes and how that might affect whether people use them. So one of the reviews looks at the severe mental illness population and the other looks at more general population, and we found very similar things, it should be said, across the two. So it's been really fun doing this kind of work to inform the intervention, and there's still a little bit going on in that way, because we've now developed an intervention, but we're just getting members of the public and clinicians to feedback on that intervention, and then obviously that next step will be doing the feasibility study.
It's really nice to see the behind the scenes work and analysis that kind of goes into the next studies that hopefully we'll be looking at in our review one day. And I think it's something we've talked about a lot, that like once you establish that something works, right, we know that e-cigarettes with nicotine help people quit smoking. It's like, how do you optimize it? How do you get people to use it? How do you reach people who maybe otherwise wouldn't be trying out this intervention in the first place? So it's really cool to hear about the role of conversation analysis in there. And one of the things that really resonated with me that Xinxin said was about, it's not just like how you offer the support, but it's how you even broach the topic in the first place, right? And that patient-clinician relationship and how conversation analysis can help look into that as well. So really interesting stuff.
Well, often, you know, even clinicians can be quite nervous about broaching topics that they think, you know, isn't necessarily what someone's come in expecting to talk about. And we know these things are generally acceptable to the patient, but if we can give even the clinician ways of broaching a topic that makes them feel more comfortable, that they think the patient will be less resistant, that also probably makes them more inclined to actually give the intervention in the first place.
Absolutely, especially where you can back it up with data.
Exactly, yeah.
And be like, we're not just saying that this works well and patients react well to it. We have data that shows that. So that's a really powerful tool. I remember when I was at Oxford, one of the roles sometimes I played was helping our medical students like role play, bringing up smoking with patients, and we get actors who would play patients, and it was always interesting to watch and kind of try and build their confidence in even bringing up smoking in the first place. We know it can make such a difference, and yet, you know, our clinicians are humans, and just like other humans, they're worried about the impact that their words might have on people. So this is really exciting work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, that is it from us this month. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Chinchin for the interview, and we hope to be checking in with you again next month on the May edition of Let's Talk E-Cigarettes. Please subscribe on iTunes or Spotify, and stay tuned for our next episode. Thank you to Jonathan Livingston Banks for running searches, to Elsa Butler for producing this podcast, and of course to all of you for tuning in. The music is written by Johnny Berliner and I, and performed by Johnny. Our Living Systematic reviews are supported by funding from Cancer Research UK. The views expressed in this podcast are those of Nicola and I, and do not represent those of the funders.
Friend, switching to vaping is safer than smoking. May help you quit in the end. But remember to mention the findings we have. Can't tell us what'll happen long term. Even though we know vaping is safer than smoking, we may still find cause for concern. If you're thinking of switching to vaping, do it! That's what the experts agree. Smoking's so bad for you, they all concur. The vaping beast burning, but there's much to learn of effects long term yet to be seen.